In today's interview, I am delighted to be joined by tech and media research analyst at Berenberg, Ciaran Donnelly. Ciaran joined Berenberg in September 2023 and leads the research coverage for the UK TMT sector. He's covered the TMT sector for over a decade, with a focus on software platforms and media. His previous roles include working in the corporate finance and M&A TMT sector team at Barclays, where he gained experience across a range of transactions, and as an equity research analyst at Liberum Capital. Ciaran graduated with an MSc in finance from Warwick Business School. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you very much for joining me today.
The equity story is hugely important to whether or not an IPO gets done. If an IR professional can be in situ in a private company, even 12 months in advance, I think that is a really good opportunity.
Welcome to the podcast, Ciaran, and thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Clara. Thanks for having me.
So let's start by understanding your background and experience. It would be great if you can talk us through your career history.
Yeah, sure. So I've been working in the industry for over a decade. Started life on the research side as part of kind of a grad scheme. I guess that grad scheme was a really good kind of starting point because you get to rotate around not just research, but you do a bit of time in corporate finance, corporate broking, as well as kind of sales and trading. So I guess in terms of a starting point to understand each department within kind of your traditional investment bank and how they fit together, it was a really good starting point. And then ultimately, landed on TMT equity research. And then after about 3 or 4 years, I actually made the move over to the corporate finance side. I joined Barclays to join their TMT sector team. And that, again, I think it was a really good kind of eye-opener in terms of today kind of being back on the research side, understanding both sides of the wall, how they fit in together. And I would say in terms of kind of how behind the curtain, how decisions are made from that side of the wall and ultimately what that means in terms of kind of the public facing aspect of kind of capital markets. So I would say reading an RNS today with that kind of perspective gives you probably a different insight into some of the wording choices. But yeah, I think in terms of today, I joined Berenberg just under 2 years ago to kind of lead the UK TMT research offering here. I'm part of a team of four. We're covering over 40 companies in the UK TMT space at the moment and continue to grow that number. From a personal perspective, I mean, my focus has always kind of been on the more software and I would say digital media side of things. But yeah, that's a quick kind of run through on my background.
And just to delve in, just a team of four. So how do you kind of split that coverage across the 40 stocks? Do you cover different stocks or do you tag team a little bit on some companies and sectors?
Yeah, I would say in terms of kind of how we structure it, we all would have our kind of focus, I would say, in terms of specific subsectors. And so each person would be effectively lead on a specific stock. We take the approach that I think we want to do everything ourselves. We don't kind of use junior resource, let's say, in terms of kind of building models and then they write the research and we just put our name to it. We do everything from building the models from scratch to writing each research note. And so I think that just lends itself to, I would say, just understanding everything in depth. And so there's no kind of questions, hopefully, that can come out of the blue that we kind of don't know or haven't looked at before. I kind of focus on software and digital media. I cover 15 or so companies at the moment. There's probably, 75 UK TMT companies. And obviously, look, TMT is a great space with lots of really exciting companies in the UK, large and small. And I would say in terms of the process, look, we look at the entire 75, what we're interested, what we think is exciting, and then kind of go from there.
And just a quick follow up on the modeling point, because some equity research teams now outsource the model building. So it's good to hear that you're working on the models yourselves. How complex are those for the companies that you're covering?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point. And my personal perspective on modeling is, look, I want to have it sufficient that we have the detail to properly underpin our forecasts ultimately, but equally I want to have it in a way that our clients can download it, pick it up, and it's intuitive to them. So I think if it's overly complex, one, obviously it can lead to increase in kind of forecasting errors, but two, in terms of someone from whatever buy side client it may be, can easily pick it up and understand it. So that's kind of my guiding principle on modeling. You can do our job, and in a way you can model any different way. I think I've worked with lots of different analysts who have taken different approaches, and I don't think ultimately there's any right answer, but I think intuitive and detailed is clearly kind of the key goals.
Do you have frustrations with the way that companies guide sometimes, or when you're speaking to investor relations professionals, maybe give an example of a really good IRO who is able to kind of walk you through the inputs to your model, or maybe on the flip side, what frustrates you when companies are giving guidance or discussing your modeling with you?
Yeah, I think the most important thing from a company perspective is consistency. I think consistency lends itself to help us in terms of updating the model, consistency of tracking historics and how things have trended. And obviously that enables us to give a good steer on what that might look like in the future, which ultimately is our prime responsibility, I would say. And I guess the flip side of that, which to your question, what is quite frustrating is when there's a number of changes or lots of different changes in terms of reporting, whether that kind of be divisional structures or specific KPIs. I think investors find that typically quite annoying, is probably not the right word, but it has that sense of kind of potentially moving the goalposts. And I would say naturally, most people in the market are quite cynical to changing of KPIs, because ultimately, I think people naturally go to, well, you're either trying to hide something or that KPI potentially doesn't look as good as you want it to, and therefore you're kind of moving the goalposts. So I think number one is consistency. I think if you could be consistent, you're gonna find a lot of fans in my area, but also obviously on the buy side. I think in terms of kind of how IR fits into that goal, I would say on the modeling side, being available. I think that is number one. If, let's say, it's full year results and we're trying to get a note out the next morning or the next day, having the opportunity to pick up the phone, have a quick kind of half an hour with the IR to kind of sense check some of the assumptions you're using. I think that clearly gives us kind of peace of mind that we're not doing something terribly wrong. And so, yeah, I think availability is absolutely a positive. And I think proactivity. So if there is something that has changed, I think a kind of proactive reach out is always helpful for us, just in terms of, you would obviously hope that we've seen and we're abreast of everything that's going on. But nonetheless, I think kind of a proactive reach out to say, hey, don't know if you've seen this, do you want to talk through what that might mean? That's always helpful for us as well.
It's a really good point on results day, because a lot of IR teams go straight into the key roadshow meetings of management here on the afternoon following the results announcements and presentation. And actually, if you're a single IRO or so sort of one man team, then having an hour carved out of that roadshow schedule, which just gives you a bit of time to follow up with the analysts, I think is a really valuable way to do it. Obviously, if you're a bigger team, then you can kind of tag team who attends the meetings.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And to that, obviously, if the first time you are seeing the set of results, you're not wall crossed, is 7 a.m., getting that call at kind of 7:05 to kind of 7:15 to just literally have a minute or two, that is also really helpful. And yeah, I can imagine if there's multiple people in the IR team and there's maybe 10 to 15 analysts covering a stock, then that helps with kind of getting around in a timely manner. So you can kind of, I guess, communicate the key points that you think are relevant in that release.
So can you walk us through a typical day at Berenberg? You've already touched on the sort of key 7 to 7:15 period, but interesting to hear what a typical day might look like for you.
Yeah, and I guess this is one of the great things about the job is there isn't really a typical day. We do lots of kind of different things, but I would say kind of your most typical of typical days is we're in the office probably around kind of between 6:45 and 7. Why is that? Because in the UK, at least, all RNSs come out at 7 a.m. on the dot, or hopefully on the dot. And so your initial hour is one, looking to see if there's been any RNSs either planned or unplanned on your coverage or other stocks you're looking at in relation to your coverage. And so in that first hour, if there is news flow, you'll try and get it around internally first to kind of sales and trading to give a kind of view on what that might mean for the stock in question. That's kind of your first port of call. And then I would say in terms of key investors you want to talk to on that specific stock that you think are either holders or interested non-holders. And so that first hour really is kind of a really busy hour in terms of digesting information and then kind of forming a view and what that might mean for the share price in the short term and the medium and longer term. And then, look, if there is a results presentation, you would typically have market open at 8, and then that results presentation would typically be between probably kicking off 8:30 to 10:30, depending on the company. And that would be normally kind of a half an hour, 45 minute presentation from management, followed by Q&A. And then again, you're back on internal kind of our chat function to give an initial view on what was said and what that might mean. And again, your kind of key audience at that point is kind of sales traders. And also then I would say, look, you have lots of ad hoc inbound from clients who might be looking to talk about specific points or just asking for a more general view. And that's pretty much throughout the day on those kind of general typical days where you have some news flow or results. And then kind of intertwined with that, you're obviously trying to potentially get a note out the next day. So you'll start drafting your note and updating numbers as well. And look, our view is if we're not wall crossed on the results the night before, our aim is to get something out kind of the next day, first thing pre-market, because I think speed is key in terms of our role and getting information out to the market and our views out to the market in a timely manner, I think for me is one of the first ports of call.
I'm interested in your perspective, having been on the advisory side and on the sell side. In terms of when companies publish and structure an RNS announcement, and you've only got 10 minutes, particularly if it's an unscheduled announcement, yeah, you're not expecting, like, how do you navigate the announcement? Which areas are you going to first? And what frustrates you about the way companies are burying information in announcements?
Yeah, I think ultimately it depends and it's different for every case. And I think if it is, let's say, a non-wall cross set of results, you probably in your mind have what are the key debates in the market at the moment or what are the key pieces of information that people are really focused on. And I think for me, I'll try and kind of go straight to those pieces of information to see, okay, how is this KPI trended? Where is it relative to consensus expectations and what does that mean? And then if it is up or down, kind of what's the rationale that the company have provided in respect to how it's performed? So I think kind of a lot of the work is actually done in advance, understanding what are the key debates, what are the key issues. And so when you do get that RNS, clearly it could be 20, 30 pages long in some scenarios. Clearly, you're not going to be able to digest that amount of information in kind of 15, 20 minutes. And so initially, yeah, you're going for that key information, as well as, I think, if you look at any RNS, it's structured in a way where the company has outlined what it deems kind of the highlights up front, whether it be from an operational or strategic standpoint. And I think nowadays, most companies, when it comes to full year results, have had a full year trading update. So a lot of the numbers, P&L wise, will probably be known in advance to that kind of results. So then clearly kind of the forward-looking statements, the outlook statement becomes kind of a key piece of information that is probably new information that is going to be closely kind of, I would say, diligenced. And so that's probably one of the key areas we'll go to next in terms of how that release might be taken positively or negatively.
Next, let's talk a little bit about your interaction with fund managers. So, like, roughly what percentage of your time is spent talking to the buy side? And give us a bit of a steer on those conversations. What are they most interested in when you speak to them?
Yeah, I think it goes through different cycles. So let's maybe take kind of Q1 as an example. You come back typically early January, and we try and get a 2025 outlook note like many other research teams and analysts will. And that's typically kind of, I think our 2025 outlook note was about 160 pages. And that is kind of a states of the world type view in terms of our sector, our specific stocks. And so in that first few weeks in January, we'll be heads down trying to kind of write clearly a very detailed, long piece of work. And so you will go through cycles where a lot of your time will be writing in a scenario like that. But then once you publish that piece of research at Berenberg, we then will go into effectively a marketing schedule where we will go in person, obviously in London and Edinburgh in terms of the UK, but then we will also go all around Europe in terms of Dublin, Benelux, Paris, Frankfurt, all the main Switzerland, all the main kind of key investor hubs. And that will be full day roadshows, 5 to 7 meetings, depending on the schedule. Typically, you'll go in person, as well as then we do the US. And so the US will be typically a week roadshow as well. So you will have kind of your work done, let's say. And then in kind of Q1, you can do between kind of 15 to 20 days of roadshowing around. And that will be kind of just purely meetings. Then, let's say on a more normalized basis, you'll have, again, lots of inbound requests on a more ad hoc basis where clients will want to talk about specific stocks or maybe even a sector catch up. And look, it can be 2-3 hours a day. It could be more, it can be less. And then when it's results, it can be much more kind of back and forth. So Bloomberg Chat is kind of a key tool that we will use in terms of discussing news flow with clients, and that can be kind of throughout the day. So it really varies, but I think the great thing about Berenberg is, I guess, we have salespeople across the UK, Europe, and the US, and so it really is kind of a full platform from that perspective. And so as an analyst, that's a great thing, because we get so much access, not just in the UK, but in the Europe and US. And so we do a lot of investor engagement as part of our role. And obviously that's brilliant for our companies, because we get the story kind of far and wide.
And just tell me a little bit more about the interaction with your global sales team. I mean, do your US sales team dial into the morning meeting, or do you catch up with them separately? Just interested in of how you interact with the sales desks.
Yeah, so obviously time-wise, we will have kind of our European sales briefings or meetings first thing in the morning. So I think our European sales meeting kicks off at kind of 7:15, and then our US version will be around midday, because clearly they're obviously based in predominantly New York, but not just New York. So the majority of them are kind of 5 hours behind. So we'll have that midday meeting. It's a similar kind of style. You're giving the key update on whatever that might be, a new note or some results or what you think is important at the time. And so, yeah, I think that's our opportunity to address our entire sales team across Europe and the US to kind of give them what the key information is.
Changing subject a little bit now, Berenberg recently held its inaugural IPO forum at its UK flagship conference. I've seen a lot of great feedback on LinkedIn from different attendees from the event. Are you able to share a few highlights from the forum?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Grove is one of actually a string of amazing conferences we do here at Berenberg. I think our flagship conference at the end of the year, Penny Hill, is kind of a pan-Euro conference, and the Grove is our flagship UK conference. And look, our goal here at Berenberg is to make it the best UK conference going. And I think this year was a testament to the hard work all our events team and everyone across the organization has done in terms of making it as such. We had in the 4 days at the Grove this year, 150 or so different corporates, 350 different investors from the UK, Europe, and the US. So it was a jam-packed few days. But as you said, in addition to kind of our traditional kind of 3-day conference that we have been doing, we added on an IPO forum on the Monday of the conference this year. And look, what was the goal? The goal was to get a bunch of private companies who may or may not be thinking about IPOing and demystifying the process. I mean, we had an amazing range of panelists who talked about it from the company perspective, from the investor perspective. And I think more generally, what we're trying to do here at Berenberg is, I think we're a little bit sick of all the negativity you read with respect to kind of the UK capital markets. We here are incredibly positive in terms of the outlook for UK capital markets. And I think we're about time we're being a bit louder about that. And obviously, you alluded to that Sunday Times article. I think that's kind of part of hopefully the rhetoric around the UK starting to shift and a bit more positivity. I know the UK media, they do love to be a little bit negative at times around not just UK capital markets, but UK more generally. And I think, look, clearly that positivity came through in terms of the attendees. And like you say, I've had lots of feedback that it was a really, really positive event. I mean, our managing partner, Dave Mortlock, and our head of the investment bank, Laurie Janssens, I think they've done an incredible job around really positioning Berenberg from the UK side to take advantage of what we think is a really exciting time in the next kind of 5-10 years.
Really encouraging to hear, and actually echoes what I've heard from a couple of fund managers who I've interviewed in 2025. So far, the outlook does appear to be more positive. People continue to be positive about London as a listing venue, and there does seem to be more activity. Great to hear that. And can you share your experience marketing IPOs? I think it'd be really interesting for the IR audience to understand a little bit more about, particularly when you're a connected analyst. I'm sure you've worked a lot, particularly sort of in 2021 boom. Just walk us through that process from your perspective.
Yeah, no, and look, I think from the research perspective, it's not too dissimilar to the kind of, let's say, everyday job of covering companies. Obviously, our part in the process, it really comes to the fore through the PDIE process. So that's the kind of pre-deal investor education process. And that, here at Berenberg, we will utilize the entire team because, I mean, in terms of Berenberg's research platform, I think now we've got 80, 90 analysts covering over 800 companies, not just from the UK TMT side, but we have our European TMT colleagues. We've got our, in some scenarios, kind of, let's call it kind of large cap vertical specialists. And so we'll kind of bring the full kind of pitch to bear where needed. And so in at Sonari, we'll have, let's say, all four of us on the UK TMT side, all doing different kind of strands when it comes to that PDIE process. We will write what in effect will look to most like an initiation, where we'll go through all the history of the company, where we see in terms of kind of competitive positioning, product offering. And so it's really, like I said, trying to just get investors up the curve in terms of knowledge of the company, so that when it comes to ultimately deciding whether to participate in the IPO, they have a well-informed view and can kind of make a informed decision on whether to participate or not.
Do you have any thoughts on good investor relations ahead of an IPO?
Yeah.
And before you answer, one of our awesome missions at Equator is to try and get investor relations involved much earlier in the IPO process. Often IR is only brought in as a function a couple of weeks before the ITF, and it's late to really inform the equity story and the positioning of the company. So if you can share any insight into where you have worked with IR or any thoughts around good investor relations in an IPO would be really interesting.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. I think structuring of the investment case and the equity story is hugely important to the success or whether or not an IPO gets done. And so I think I agree. The earlier the better, really. I think if an IR professional can be in situ in a private company, I mean, even 12 months in advance, I think that is a really good opportunity for them to thoroughly kind of do their kind of DD on the business and bearing out what are the key kind of USPs and how you can then structure that into an equity story that, investment professionals are going to resonate with and understand. I think the earlier the better. I completely agree.
And next, can we talk a little bit more about tech and media as a sector? Just interested in what themes you're seeing in tech and media. In particular, are you seeing much M&A? It looks like there's quite a bit of M&A or rumored M&A within your sector.
Yeah. With respect to M&A, I think that we've obviously seen a number of companies get either taken private or acquired in the last 12, 24 months. But to us, that's a clear sign of the quality of the companies in the UK. And whilst there are some who are trading on attractive valuation multiples, clearly those strategic buyers or private equity houses who will take advantage of that. And I think that will continue. There's always going to be demand for quality assets, and there is a lot of quality assets in the UK. So we think, yeah, you're likely to see that trend continue in 2025 and beyond. The other thing I think is interesting is clearly, and I'm sure we'll get onto it, is AI. I know some are probably now head in hands because they've become apathetic to kind of the constant talk about AI and how that might impact or change things. But yeah, I think genuinely we are starting to see kind of practical examples of where it is either benefiting or changing business models. And so I think this is a very fast moving environment where, I mean, you can see what happened with the DeepSeek kind of news, what, a number of weeks ago. It just kind of transformed things over the space of a weekend and changed the narrative of what people thought with respect to AI. And maybe it's kind of, I would say, a sign of how kind of narratives can shift very quickly with respect to that. So I think that clearly is an interesting area. And I think, look, more generally, the great thing about TMT is it's not really a sector where there's these huge macro trends that affect every company equally. So I think what we really focus on is less so kind of macro trends and how they impact the sector as a whole, but more we are fundamental equity analysts. And so every company has a specific case, and we kind of try and look at it, yes, from a top down level, but more from bottom up level, and how these trends and the unique trends that are specific to that company, how they affect it, and how I guess their position for those trends going forward.
And you touched on AI, and is it a big focus area for investors and the companies positioning themselves or disclosing adequately what they're doing in this area?
Yeah, I think everyone's learning on the job with respect to AI, I think, in a lot of scenarios. And the other thing I would say is, whilst it has become clearly a key part of the zeitgeist over what probably the last 2 or 3 years, machine learning and people using machine learning tools, which is what most people used to call what we are now terming AI, they've been doing it for years beyond what we've kind of been talking about. And so I think it's not as new a trend in a lot of scenarios that people think. I just think that probably the lexicon has changed and has become more part of the forefront in terms of generalist investment cases. I would say, though, there's clearly some areas where things are moving from a practical standpoint much more quickly and have the potential to change things more dramatically. I would say in 2025, I think probably the key kind of practical example is the introduction of agentic AI and how that's going to really change user interfaces and user experiences. And I think what that's going to mean for businesses can, I mean, be dramatic. And so I think, look at Google as an example, how the Google results page has changed in the last 12 to 18 months has dramatic kind of impacts for businesses who are exposed to Google results. PPC on a relative basis results are getting pushed up the page, SEO results are getting pushed down the page. So what does that mean for click-through rates and companies who are dependent on traffic that is generated from Google? And also kind of the increase in zero-click searches. And that idea is kind of, if you are a user looking for, let's say you're asking Google a specific question, and then the AI overview provides you with an answer that answers that question, then you might not end up clicking on any of the links in that page, which clearly can have knock-on impacts for different companies. So they're just a few practical examples. And I think that's what we try and do, is rather than kind of talking it from 10,000 feet, what AI might do, it's looking more at what the practical examples are today and how that might impact kind of share prices today.
And what about your day job? So I spoke to an agency yesterday that was founded by a couple of former fund managers, and they have an AI tool that helps summarize companies' results announcements very much with a sort of sell-side perspective. So what is the kind of key takeaways? What's the sentiment? What's the tone being conveyed? Are you adopting any technology within your day job that makes it easier for you to scrutinize more companies?
You know, I think there's kind of two aspects to this. One, I think, is productivity. And clearly, there's lots of productivity tools that can help us do things more quickly. I mean, I think one example is probably what everybody probably knows AI to be in kind of the first instance, which is kind of generative AI, whether that be kind of ChatGPT or Perplexity. If you just think, I mean, the time spent if you were researching something through Google Desktop 10 years ago, you type in a question, then you just start clicking on links, reading articles, and kind of going from there. Whereas obviously now you can put in very specific questions and Perplexity can give you quite detailed answers. And so trying to understand and learn about new topics, you can do much more quickly. So I think that's one kind of specific example. And then I think just in terms of other things, we will spend hours meeting companies and trying to, I guess, understand. And so note-taking, I know this sounds kind of boring, but kind of a more efficient process of taking notes. And then I would say synthesizing that data into what can be helpful and useful going forward, things like that. I think it's at this stage, it's a bunch of kind of productivity gains that can help. And look, I'm sure we could do an iteration of this podcast in about 5 years and we'd have probably 5 or 10 different things that we haven't even thought about today that can help us.
Yeah, it's interesting in IR. It's evolved quite a lot over the last 12 months. There's a very natural reticence of IR teams to adopt it for anything that's sort of non-public data. Mm-hmm. Although there could be really practical applications when it comes to drafting more efficiently and producing results, materials, board papers, etc.
Yeah,
a challenge when you're working with non-public information. So where we are seeing it within investor relations tends to be more efficient to scrutinizing public data. So looking at peer group research, for example, analyzing and summarizing sell-side research, there's some interesting applications emerging that can make the sort of research stage of a results process more efficient. And then let's talk a little bit about your interaction with companies, particularly IR. If you can give some examples of what good investor relations looks like to you, or maybe on the flip side, what bad investor relations experiences you might have had over the years.
Yeah, and we talked a little about this earlier, but I really think the IR professionals who separate themselves and for at least sell-side analysts are incredibly helpful are those who are proactive. I think proactivity is absolutely a positive in our case. Those IRs who kind of see news that might not be necessarily coming from the company itself, but is relevant to the company, and they can circulate around whatever their distribution list is, kind of sell-side analysts or a broader kind of remit, and just say, look, there is this piece of news that has come out. This is our view on it. And, you know, that kind of saves them time, I'm sure, in terms of getting 10, 15 different phone calls and repeating the same response. If you can be on the front foot with these things always, I think that's clearly a better standpoint. So I think kind of proactivity is great. And then, I guess, look, it's a probably a function of how esoteric a business can be. Clearly, there are a number of companies who don't have IR. And I think if you have a complex either investment case or product suite or business case, I think having an IR professional who can demystify, particularly for generalist investors, I think that clearly is a massive help, because ultimately I think for the buy side, they're rich on opportunity, but they're short on time. And I think if you can help create a bite-sized version of the investment case or help people get up the curve much more quickly, I think that's where IR can really add value, by just making that, I guess, information gathering process much more efficient and enable them to kind of make an informed decision more quickly.
I agree completely. I think a real skill of good investor relations is being an internal expert on your company and its sector and subject matter, but being able to communicate that in a way that a generalist fund manager would be able to understand, and particularly personally if you're in a more sort of tech industry or a more complex business that maybe isn't as easily sort of understandable. It's always about reducing the internal jargon and again making that easily to understand and easy to model for the buy side as well. So some really good points you raised there. And how do you like to access management? And do you get a sufficient access to management? And what would a good meeting with a executive team look like to you?
Yeah, no, I think we're fortunate in the case that management tend to be very helpful. They understand, I guess, the role we have in terms of helping them. We can save them time in terms of, I guess, doing investor meetings to get, I'd say, investors up the information curve in some scenarios. So then when they meet them, they're kind of not starting from day one, but they're kind of further along. So we're fortunate in that we do get great access to management teams. And I think From my perspective, it's look, let's have an open conversation about the good, but also the not so good things about either the business or the market. And so I think going into a conversation where you're open and honest about the challenges, it can only be helpful, because look, that's when you can have a fully formed view, and then you can debate what the positives or the negatives might be, and then you can debate what's priced into the share price. Luckily, I've been fortunate in that I work with a lot of, or I cover a lot of companies that have really, really open and good management teams. So open and I would say availability again is clearly helpful for us that we do get that time with management, whether it be around results time or most importantly, probably in that kind of initiation process where we're writing that first piece of research, which tends to be that landmark piece, which outlines our view on the company.
Do you get to attend any capital markets days or site visits? And maybe have there been any fun or memorable events you might have been able to attend in the past?
Capital markets days can be great in that they're kind of big showpiece cases for management to go through what their strategy is and what the outlook for the company is. The one thing I would say, which I think is really helpful, and it tends to be maybe a bit more targeted at sell-side analysts, but it's kind of evenings or a dinner with the broader management team, that it's not just the CEO and the CFO, it's kind of the head of X, Y, and Z. And so for me personally, I think some of my companies do those types of events, and they're brilliant for us in terms of getting exposure to that next level of management, understanding kind of the bench strength of companies, but also you clearly get a different view from those operational heads who are in the kind of day-to-day grind of whatever their division might be doing. And I think the insights you get from them can be really beneficial to us. So I would say actually my one kind of piece I would say is that more of those types of events, I think all companies should be trying to give a bit of exposure to their kind of senior management team that are running the operations, because I think that clearly demonstrates the quality and the culture of the business better than probably a kind of structured CMD does.
Good tip there. And actually, funnily enough, one of the fund managers I interviewed recently was talking about the value of dinners when it's a small group and access to management in a more informal setting, that they actually really enjoy that exposure and opportunity. So really good tips there. And just as we wrap up the conversation, do you have any questions you would like to ask me?
No, I think we've obviously covered a huge amount of ground there, and I think it's been a really interesting conversation. So thank you for having me.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Kieran.
Thanks, Marlene Clark.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Enquire, the Investor Relations podcast. I'm your host, Clara Melia. For more IR insights, please do follow Equatory on LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. Plus, if you're interested in featuring on this podcast or have any feedback, please email us at info@equatory.com. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.